episode 85, correct?
Oh my God.
Is it?
I think so.
Okay.
85. We're still alive.
This is Ethnically Ambiguous.
And today we are dedicating the entirety of this episode to Ilhan Omar and what she stands for in the U.S. government and why she's getting dragged.
And why Democrats and Republicans and this entire government of old pundit fucks are in the wrong.
Yes. And we also, of course, talk about Palestine and why it should be acknowledged in this time. So stay tuned.
Who are we? Where do we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Hi, Shireen.
Hi, it's me, Shireen.
And her name is Bean.
I'm an obscene machine, and I like green.
Oh,
sorry,
no, you
I'm fiddling with my mic. If
didn't.
You guys hear weird noises. Hi, Anna.
Oh, no, Shireen. Didn't.
I see you literally like every other day.
I know. I don't know what I'm doing.
Today is Thursday the 7th, and a lot is going on this week.
Yeah, and we're mad, and we just cannot seem to get glad.
I'm always angry all the time. I have, and I don't know if I ever talked about this on the podcast, but I always had really bad anger issues as a kid, and I don't think they ever got really resolved.
No.
No. and so I'm just angry all the time, and I don't know how to channel that anger into anything.
You know what? I see that in you, and I love it. Just joking.
Anger, man.
I love the anger you bring to the table. Just a quick update. My dog is in here eating food. So
he's
if you hear some
cute
crunch, crunch, crunches, it's because he's crunch, crunch hungry.
I know. He's very cute. He's wearing a Lakers jersey,
which I did not put on him. My boyfriend put on him.
But you bought it.
No, I didn't buy the Lakers jersey.
Oh.
He bought the Lakers jersey.
JK.
You think I'm out here spending money on Lakers jerseys?
I don't fucking know your life.
I have a joke that he loves Steph Curry because he's the same size as Steph Curry. That's a joke for all the basketball fans.
He's small!
If you're a Warriors fan, that joke is for you. Or you might be offended by it because I called Steph Curry small, but he is a small guy. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
What was your week like? Actually, I saw you the day before yesterday.
Yeah, we went to Kiss My Ass. Oh, should we tell them
Then we had a guest on Tuesday, remember?
Oh, that's right. I completely blacked that out.
We've seen each other every other day.
Yeah, you're right.
We're going to do that again because I'm seeing you on Sunday.
But can we talk about what we did in the green room after the show on Sunday night with the
balloon? Oh my God, I completely forgot.
I was not going to let you get away from not talking about
this. It was at least like a 6-minute thing.
Yeah, so
if not more.
I produce a show called Kiss My Ass, and Shireen came to it and we were like hanging out. The show, I had to move my car by 11, so I was getting like anxious. So I was like hanging out in the green room waiting for the show to end for like my comics who host the show to get off stage. And Shireen was back there with me and there was a balloon.
And just a random, like almost deflated balloon, mm-hmm. like a white. It said dirty. Like, it said dirty because of like there's like a dance night, I think that's called like Dance Yourself Clean or something.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Or like nasty. What was it?
I think it said dirty.
Yeah, it probably said dirty. And we just were playing a game where we were trying to basically knock it back and forth to each other, but each one of us was only allowed to touch it once.
With our index finger.
Yeah, with our index
finger. Tiny finger. And it was usually just like a frantic little
poke. Yeah, so if I knocked it and it didn't go far enough, Shireen had to like run and knock it back. Anyway, so this went on for like a tight five.
Like, I didn't even realize, I don't think either of us thought I was going to keep going, but
we just both kept
doing it.
We couldn't stop. We were like, oh, and then at the last one, I panicked and didn't knock it far enough and then punched it, and then
you punched it really hard. Yeah. It was like a moment. I haven't seen you panic like that in a long time.
I was like, oh no, it's going to hit the ground and it's not close enough.
And you literally
Shireen
punched it to the ground. It wasn't just like a punch out of your face. It was like a punch it to the ground.
Yeah, it was madness. And then we kind of snapped out of it like, what are we doing?
I'm just surprised no one walked in on us because I feel like that could have happened. Then we could have had to explain that.
Waitress did walk in at one point, so that would have been funny if she saw us doing that. Like, oh, sorry, don't mind us.
I would have wanted to be like, just joined.
Yeah.
Just like, oh, I love this game. So that was a cool moment for our friendship. I think we both realized why we like each other.
Because we could do that mindlessly forever, probably. It is kind of a fun thing because it's so mindless. You just go back and forth.
Maybe that's why people like sports.
And there's something so funny about a balloon. The lightness of a balloon is a fun thing to play with.
Yeah. Anyway, that was our Sunday night.
Yeah, what did you guys do? I didn't do anything else. I hung out with Ace, my puppy.
He's a very cute puppy. He also has a very cute raincoat that I saw earlier. Mm-hmm. His raincoat is very cute.
He has rubber duckies on his raincoat.
It's not a raincoat if it doesn't have a rubber duck on it.
Tell me about it. We also got him some pajamas and a fleece vest. Because ever since we got him a haircoat, anytime we put a blanket on him, he looks so cute and comfortable. And then yesterday, he like jumped out of his bed and his blanket stayed on him. And he like fell asleep on the ground and the blanket was still on him. And it was madness. We both passed away of cuteness.
I'm pretty sure your dog is bigger than your cat or smaller than your cat.
Yeah, Trim has been bullying him a little.
Because he's bigger than him.
I think he thinks it's playing, but it really just turns out to be like aggression of Trim, like literally like squirrel jumping on him and then Ace being like, ah, and running for his life. Because he's like, what the fuck, you weird cat? Get away from me. And then the other cat, Zach has a theory that the other cat wants to be his friend, but doesn't know how. She just, like, stands far away from him and stares and, like, meows with anxiety.
Kobe is just a wreck.
Yeah. That is the perfect way to describe Kobe. The other cat Kobe I'm describing, Shereen nailed it.
Yeah.
She's a wreck.
She's adorable and very fluffy, but also, like, anxiety-ridden. Yeah.
She's stressed.
Yeah.
But she's always
like
that.
She's also surrounded by, like, Trim and... I don't know. What was she like before she moved in with
Sam?
You?
Same
she's always
way.
Been a wreck.
She's just so weird. So she was my boyfriend's cat. We brought our cats together. I don't know. I guess her constant need of attention and love from my boyfriend didn't pan out well for her.
Do you want to know something I'm very sad about that what? I've been texting my family about every so often?
Michael Jackson documentary?
Well, that, but also I'm not sad about that. I'm more disturbed. But I'm sad about that gray cat in my garage. I haven't seen it in like a month.
Are you fucking serious?
I'm so upset, and I keep asking. I haven't seen it since it flooded and rained. Hold on.
Wait, this is.
What? Do you remember when it like was raining so hard it was flooding a couple weeks ago?
You think something happened?
I don't know, but I'm like my heart is like broken because I used to love coming home to that cat. And I would never want to like hinder its freedom by like trapping it in my apartment. But I loved that cat so much and it had these like white mittens and I haven't seen it in like a month and I'm devastated. And that's how I know I can't have a pet.
Mm. Yeah.
I can't have
that's
a pet.
Sad.
I can't have a pet. Also, I stole a fake plant from my office last week. So.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
No one listens to this.
They're like, hey, Shereen, we were listening to your podcast, and it sounds like you stole that the director's favorite plant.
Fake plant. Yeah.
Oh, boy. Should we get into our trauma?
Yeah, we should. Hold on one moment. Your dog keeps eating things.
Oh, Jesus Christ. So we both have some, like... Ilhan Omar trauma.
Yes. I asked Anna what she wanted to talk about today earlier this day, and she brought up more Ilhan Omar stuff. Omar stuff. And I think the thing I want to talk about the most is also that. So we're going to dedicate the whole episode kind of talking about why this is so important and why it's not just one representative that is being targeted, but it's a kind of an entire ideology and why I think it's important enough to dedicate a full 55 whatever fucking minutes there are left of this episode to this reason. And I hope
you
guys stick around because we got some facts for y'all.
Yeah, you know, this was important to me because all week I was reading articles, like op-eds that people were putting out from fucking really just... bullshit ass op-eds. There was one at the Washington Post that was literally titled Ilhan Omar is the Steve King of the left, which made me want to burn this goddamn city to the ground.
That was the Washington Post, right?
Yeah, and then there was another one that was like, Ilhan Omar knows exactly what she's doing, which was another smear campaign.
It's just disgusting.
Yeah, and there were op-eds that were for her. One was called The Dishonest Smearing of Ilhan Omar. That, you know, they stood up for her, but it was just so many people writing about her. It just pissed me off. It's like, if had it had been a white man, or even just like a man in general, who did not come from Muslim or Islam, any sort of faith or background like that, they would not have been pointed out. They would not have been basically scrutinized to this level for pointing out very true facts about what's going on in the world around us. Like, she, you know, if you guys remember in a few episodes ago, she talked about how AIPAC is a giant lobby that spends a lot of money to make Israel look good and to basically give money to support politicians who also support Israel. It's really deranged and like fucked up, because it's the power it has is out of control and it's not really necessary. Like, it's
like, when you really think about what it is, it's literally, so it's an American, is it stands for the American Israel Public Affairs Committee. That's what AIPAC stands for. But it's literally just a pro-Israel committee that advocates pro-Israel policies to the Congress and executive branch of the United States. And I feel like any logical person just has to ask, like, why does this foreign country need to advocate for itself? Like, why are we so invested in a foreign country that, like, it's just shady. Like, there's no other way to put it other than it's shady to have that. Like there shouldn't be this, like... I don't know. I can't. What's like the right way to say that? It's.
Well, that's exactly what Omar questioned. She said, "I want to talk about political influence in this country that says it's okay for people to push for an allegiance to a foreign country," which was immediately jumped on.
Yep.
Because she asked, "Why is it acceptable to criticize political influence of the NRA, fossil fuel industries, and big pharma, but not the American Israel Public Affairs Committee, which is?" Factual. Why is that okay? But like, because she is a Muslim woman, immediately they were like, well, clearly she's anti-Semitic, which is not based on fact. I feel like the majority of our government right now, or not even right now, just the majority of people believe that Muslims are inherently anti-Semitic, which is not true. That is a generalization. It's just as bad about as making generalizations about Jewish people. It's not okay. That's just blatant Islamophobia. So what happened, Nancy Pelosi made or insisted that Ilhan Omar apologize for her tweets about AIPAC, which I didn't agree with. And now she's even more frustrated by what Ilhan Omar said about the comments about this foreign government that were basically supporting Israel. And basically, the House Democratic leadership planned a resolution condemning anti-Semitism that was directly, or not really directly, indirectly aimed at Ilhan Omar. It's just, it's a lot, it's very, it's just fucked up, because it doesn't make any sense as to why all of a sudden this is a thing. Because in January, Democratic leaders, they like kind of moved to push out a censor vote against Steve King, who's a Republican lawmaker widely reviled for his racism and advocacy of white supremacy.
Yeah.
So it's like, all of a sudden, why do you give a shit because this Muslim woman said something? Is it because she's a Muslim woman and not the fact that like Steve King, who is literally in office saying, I don't understand what the big deal is with having white pride, when you're like, excuse me? Do you not understand what history is?
Yeah.
And so, of course, taking, you know, cue from the Democrats, which is fucked up, President Trump was basically going after Omar and using like partisan advantage. He tweeted, Jewish groups have just sent a petition to Speaker Pelosi asking her to remove Omar from the Foreign Relations Committee. And he added that this was a dark day for Israel. And okay, and the letter he's referencing is signed by about a dozen extreme pro-Israel and neoconservative groups. They include the Center for Security Policy, which used to sponsor a satirical Israeli TV show that produced a cartoon depicting refugees from African states as apes.
Wow.
And another one is an organization run by Jacob Charles, who is a key player in the Islamophobia industry, who has founded several anti-Palestinian groups. Also, Noah Polak's Committee for Israel and Polak... was recently caught in Al Jazeera's leaked undercover documentary called The Lobby USA on basically helping paid interns to stage an anti-Palestinian protest. And another group on the letter was listed as a hate group by the Southern Poverty Law Center, which is an actual organization that monitors extremism. And according to the SPLC, Act for America, led by Bridget Gabriel, is listed as an anti-Muslim hate group because it pushes wild anti-Muslim conspiracy theories, denigrates American Muslims, and deliberately conflates mainstream and radical Islam.
Wow.
How is that okay?
Nope.
All of a sudden, these extremists who hate Islam and Muslims,
they get a pass.
They get a pass because they're like, well, this is out of line. So, luckily, many on the left, they came out in strong support of Omar's statement, which, despite being aimed at all lawmakers, has been characterized as anti-Semitic, not just by pro-Israel Democrats, but by the GOP. And the same GOP, which took 16 years to hand, you know, consequences to Steve King for being a fascist, and whose House Minority Leader tweeted something far more anti-Semitic than anything Omar said, and whose House Minority Whip, a man who once reportedly described himself as a David Duke without baggage, recently appeared to accuse Ilhan Omar of being susceptible to espionage. This is all happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do want to mention that one of Omar's advocates that has been so amazing is AOC, is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She just today on the 7th issued a call for donations from her supporters because a pro-Israel activist threatened, it seemed like he threatened to organize against her and her two fellow Democrats. So basically, in an email to supporters who funded her successful congressional bid, she conveyed a line from an interview that that American-Israel Public Affairs Committee activist Stefan Fisk gave to the New York Times, in which he predicted that her, as well as Omar and Rashida Tlaib, how do I even say that?
I say Tlaib.
Tlaib, it is Tlaib. He predicted that they would be leaving Congress sooner rather than later. He said, there are three people who, in my opinion, will not be around in several years. And this line was taken by AOC as a direct threat aimed at her and the first two Muslim women ever elected into Congress over their criticism of Israel, of the Israeli government and its treatment of Palestinians. And just because these three women have dared to question Israel's foreign policy and the influence of money in our political system, lobbying groups from across the board are working to punish them for it. And so... Yeah. I also want to mention that these are women. Like, I think that's a huge fucking difference, is because they're not taken as seriously in politics, and especially with these opinions that are, like, outlandish, they're just pushed to the side.
Yeah. And, you know, guess what? Ilhan Omar's life was literally threatened when a poster, which compared Omar to the September 11 attacks, was put up at the West Virginia State Capitol during a GOP celebration.
Yeah.
That's Islamophobia. So while this happened, the Democratic leaders added Islamophobia to the anti-Semitism resolution. But by the time it was rolled out, many Democrats, including Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, and Kamala Harris, they issued their statements of support for Omar, which is very important.
Very.
To note that people are coming out and being like, what are you doing, Nancy Pelosi?
Also, Bernie Sanders being like a very like proud Jewish man, I think that's very telling of the real definition of anti-Semitism.
Yeah, and Nancy Pelosi apparently panicked and started asking people for their opinions. That the Politico reported that she had been reduced to asking some of her closest allies what exactly she should do about Omar, which is like, are you kidding me? Literally, what was it? Like, a few months ago, so Ali Abu Mima, he tweeted, Speaker Pelosi is happy to use Ilhan Omar for self-serving diversity propaganda, but not prepared to defend her against the Israel lobby's racist Islamophobic defamation that Omar is anti-Semitic. In fact, Pelosi joined in on the smear campaign, and he tweeted out a photo of her, AOC, and more women, and Ilhan Omar on the Rolling Stone cover, which is like, oh, how interesting. Great for diversity, but not actually here to back anyone.
Yeah, she's a fake ally.
Omar has been major in exposing the cracks in the bipartisan pro-Israel alliance that has basically been unchallenged in Washington for decades, you know? Yeah. And at the same time, you know, she's new to Congress. She's helped upend the debate over Israel and basically fully exposed the GOP's opportunism in a way that should have been done a long time ago. Like, all the horrible shit the GOP has basically let Donald Trump get away with. And that's, like, produced a faction of the Democratic Party that's, like, not taking this shit anymore. And I think that's very important because Representative Bonnie Watson Coleman, she said, "We're individually and collectively already responded to the fact that we oppose all isms that do not treat people in this country fairly and justly. Mm-hmm. To continue to engage in this discussion is simply an opportunity to give both the media and Republicans distractions from our agenda. We've got important work to do," which I think is a direct attack at Pelosi. Yeah. Get your shit together. You are directly going after a woman of color just because. Like, who is in your pocket? I don't understand. Is AIPAC in your pocket all of a sudden? What is your problem?
Well, I do want to get into what AIPAC stands for just a little bit. There is a really good opinion piece that the New York Times put out by this guy named Thomas Friedman, who was a Jewish man. But
I didn't like that at all. That piece was so that's another piece that really frustrated me.
I mean, I don't agree with all of it, but he does bring up really interesting points about what AIPAC is and why he doesn't like it as an American Jew.
Mm-hmm.
He says that AIPAC for many years has been not only a rubber stamp on the right-wing policies of Benjamin Netanyahu,
uh-huh.
but that has single-handedly resulted in like tens of thousands of Israeli settlers forcing themselves into the heart of the West Bank. It's also responsible for making support for Israel a Republican cause and not a bipartisan issue, he says. And that's why a lot of right-wing politicians are AIPAC supporters and are coming after Omar because that's what AIPAC has become. But he says that AIPAC is a self-appointed lobby that, in his opinion, does not represent the life of an American Jew. So as much as I don't like a lot of his wording in this opinion piece, I think...
I mean, he does go on to say that Omar's not critical of AIPAC. She just is because she doesn't like Israel. And it's like, yo, you're literally just like pushing away.
Like I dislike this person because he's a proud opposer of like the BDS movement and stuff. But he does mention that AIPAC has let itself become this like unthinking tool of Netanyahu. And admitting that Netanyahu opposes a two-state solution. And this man who wrote this article says that this two-state solution is the only solution that he thinks is fair for both sides. And so in his opinion, he thinks AIPAC works against Israel's long-term interests. Mm-hmm. So I think really understanding what AIPAC is and not just like associating it with Israel and like with like the Jewish population is really important because it ultimately is just a political tool used by Benjamin Netanyahu. And he is a fucking shady scumbag.
Yeah, I think it's so crazy. I do want to say something you can notice is you can tell who's if you're trying to figure out if the person who wrote the op-ed is conservative or not in any way,
mm-hmm.
Look at their headshot. Most of them, if they're conservative, they have these absurd like Hollywood style headshots and how they're posed.
They're very serious.
Yeah, but if you look
usually
at like more of like
brows.
Like a progressive, it's just like a very kind of like bland person with glasses looking mm-hmm. just like, I wrote this.
Yeah.
That's how I've been able to tell them apart. Just go look at that. Notice how weird they are.
I will reiterate to say that most of this article I think is trash, but I think it's very important to see both sides. And that's the only reason I read this is because I wanted to get the full story. And I think hearing from someone else's perspective is really important. And despite me disagreeing with this person on so many things, his kind of factual description of what AIPAC does and how it's literally in Netanyahu's pocket is just pure.
It's an extension of him.
But on that note, we're going to take a quick commercial break and we'll be right back. And we're back. Anna. Floor is yours.
That was so awkward.
I'm so sorry. I did point at you. I'm sorry.
No, I just want to say a few other more things that, like, basically, a Somali American Muslim woman and former war refugee, that's Ilhan Omar, she was always going to be a transformational figure in American politics. her first 2 months into Congress, she has opened up an intense debate, not just about like United States full-throated support of Israel, but the taboo of questioning it and who gets to basically question it. And Omar's fight, of course, this is going to be a long journey ahead of us. But, and you know, in 2020, she could easily be primaried by someone, but she's made more of an impact in 2 months than some of these lawmakers have made in their entire career.
Yeah.
And that's, I was reading, there's a really good Splinter article about this that basically says, like, she's done more than anyone.
Yeah. And I love that she didn't take it back. Like, mm-hmm. she did apologize, but she didn't take back her stance.
She
like,
continues.
She's firm.
She continues yeah. to be like, this is a problem.
I respect that so much.
And I do also want to say that CNN reported that this resolution they put forth, that two influential Black congresswomen, Senator Democratic Representative Maxine Waters and Congressional Black Caucus leader Karen Bass, hadn't seen a copy of the resolution when it was announced and that they were supposed to vote today on it. That's how shady this shit is.
What fucking excuse do you have for that?
I just want to say, if you vote for this resolution and you are against Omar Ilhan and you are Omar Ilhan, I just said her name as if her Omar, Ilhan.
Yeah.
You will not be president. I'll just make that very clear yeah. right now. Because people are listening and they hear the shit you're saying and they know what you're doing and we will not stand for it. I'm just, is that a veiled threat that I will not vote for you? Yes, it's not veiled. I just told you I won't vote for you. If I find your politics coming after Muslim women for speaking the truth, I will not vote for you. Just saying. Anyway, there's so much frustration. And that's the problem is I see blatant Islamophobia.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem.
I think what frustrates me, sorry, I'm going to let you
go
back.
Ahead, go
what,
ahead.
What I just like thought about is that the majority of her supporters, if not all of her supporters, actually no, the majority, there are some white people that are coming out to support her, like Bernie Sanders and Warren. Well, I guess Warren is Native American, but the majority, I know, I was just going to say the same thing. barely. I think she's like that kid in high school that like claimed mm-hmm. some percentage to get into college. I think so many of my of the people around me that are white don't really care about this issue. Like they don't see why they should care about the plight of this woman of color who happens to be Muslim. And it's like I think like it frustrates me that it's almost being put off as just. I don't know. Do you know what I mean? It's not yeah. like something that everyone is like enraged about. Like
no.
you and I are enraged about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Because like, we're seeing the blatant injustice
yeah,
going on right now.
But it's not something like I went into work and no one fucking cared.
Well, that's
you know?
The problem that when you see that Republicans, I get it. They'll forever be smearing. But when you see the Democrats hop on the
yeah.
smear train, you're like, you fucking pieces of fake ass progressive shit. And I do see it. I see these old ass pundits who don't get it. They don't understand how to break free from the Israel or like Netanyahu
yeah.
and that crew is being evil. They can't break free from it. And it's so frustrating because it's like, take a step back.
Mm-hmm.
Take a fucking step back. And this is even more frustrating. Literally, Representative Jim Jordan is out here tweeting anti-Semitic shit at fucking Representative Jerry Nadler being like, figure it out. Nadler feeling the heat big time jumps to Tom Steyer conclusion, literally putting a money sign in Steyer's name, impeaching our president before first document request. And it's like, that is anti-Semitism in front of your fucking eyes. It's tweeted. It's literally out here. And
the
it's
money
like,
sign is the S. Let's just reiterate that. The money sign is the S.
But then a Muslim woman hops over the fence and is like, hey, guess what? Hops over the fence was a horrible reference,
no.
but I just mean like she pops out to be like, hey guys, this is fucked up. Look
yeah.
at what Israel's doing. And we're like, whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa. Anti-Semitism. And I want to play a clip real quick.
Please.
Mehdi Hassan, who is a really amazing person on the internet. I highly recommend you follow him
mm-hmm.
on Twitter. He's a columnist for The Intercept and he does a lot of Al Jazeera stuff. And I believe he's a adjunct professor at Georgetown, according to his Twitter bio. I've never been to Georgetown, so.
Oh, well, yeah, let's go.
I don't know. So here's a clip of him discussing basically how Ilhan Omar has said the exact same stuff about Saudi Arabia, and yet no one seems to care about that.
Yeah.
Yes, but the problem is, as Jeremy pointed out at the start, let's look at big picture. This resolution they're putting forward now on Thursday says really important things about the rise in the number of anti-Semitic attacks, the outrageous statements about Jews, discrimination, hate. Ilhan Omar has nothing to do with any of that. She's not expressed any hate, animus, or discrimination. And, you know, she's been on the receiving end of the hate. She has a Republican Party in West Virginia saying she's a terrorist. You have an advisor to the president going on Fox and calling her filth. So the idea that she should be targeted by a resolution is absurd. And I would say one thing here. Everything she said about Israel, she's pretty much said about Saudi Arabia. So if she's an anti-Semite, she must be an Islamophobe as well.
She has been hard after Saudi Arabia from the beginning, which is worth noting. And that poster there was in the West Virginia Capitol the other day, put up by the Republican Party of West Virginia.
There you go. It's facts. She calls out
injustice.
Evil. Yeah. You know, she calls out clear issues of what's going on, you know? And I tweeted this out. Call your representative. Say, I don't like what you guys are doing. Mm-mm. If you support Ilhan Omar, call your reps and tell them, I stand with Ilhan and you need to start to, like, wake up. Don't use those words, obviously.
It literally takes a couple minutes. Mm-hmm. And everyone, I know for sure you have a couple minutes of your day to spare. Just, like, it speaks volumes about what we can do as citizens. Like, even though sometimes I feel really helpless, well, like, little things matter.
And, you know, maybe it's worth it to point out that Ilhan Omar is a constant victim of Islamophobic threats and tropes and gets death threats. And yet we don't see a single resolution to condemn Islamophobia.
No, not a single.
Why does that not matter?
If anything, it's like promoted in media and stuff. Yeah. Every fucking Arab or Middle Eastern or whatever is a fucking terrorist. And we've brought it up that comparison before, like how we both attack the Saudi Arabian government. That does not mean we're anti-Middle Eastern, anti-Muslim. That's we're against any type of injustice or any type of government that is oppressing people, you know?
Yeah, and I think it's very important to also note, why has no one even brought up the atrocities being committed against the Palestinians in the context of this debate? Sounds like willful ignorance to me.
Yep.
Let's just question Omar. So, Shireen, I know you have some thoughts on that.
I do. I have a lot of thoughts on that. It was interesting because when Anna and I decided to talk about this, I feel like as all this is happening, people really need to know what's going on in Palestine. And so as Ilhan Omar is being smeared this week, this is happening in Palestine. Israel has cut off water supply for 2,600 Palestinians. That's 2,600 Palestinian people. Israel has bombed Gaza. Israel banned call to prayer in the Ibrahimi Mosque. Mm. The Israeli army shoots and kills a child. The Israeli settlers attack a school for the 11th time. This has all happened in a singular week. Israeli home demolitions this past week. This is even the totality of it. This is just like a summary. Israel demolishes a Palestinian village for the 141st time. So this, that sentence is... I can't even comprehend it. Israel also demolishes 4 greenhouses. Palestinian forces, Palestinian is forced to demolish their own homes in order to avoid fines. Like, literally, they kicked out Palestinians from their homes and they were forced to demolish them themselves or else they would get fined.
How does that make any sense?
It's disgusting. Israel demolishes Palestinian homes near Haifa, and then a recent UN report on demonstrations for freedom in return in Gaza. This report has said that Israel has killed 189 Palestinians, including 35 children, injured 9,000 and plus Palestinians. Israel killed and maimed Palestinians who posed no threat. Israel has shot 940 children, 39 health workers, and 39 journalists. And also, this, in my opinion, the most dishonorable army in the whole world, the Israeli army, stopped Palestinian firefighting crew from rescuing 2 children that were trapped in a fire and they burned alive. So, but let's keep in mind that if you criticize any of this, it's almost certainly indicative of anti-Semitism, especially if you mention money or AIPAC while doing so. So everyone just remains silent. I think when I say numbers out loud, they don't really absorb. Like, these are, every single number is a human person. Like, they injured 9,000 Palestinians. Can you even comprehend how many is 9,000? They killed 189 Palestinians and 35 children. Like, that's a classroom of kids. You have to really, it bothers me because I think when so much atrocity has happened in Palestine, these numbers just become statistics and they kind of don't have any emotion attached to them. I mean, it happens to me too, because it's easier not to believe that these are families, these are people that are getting affected, but it's not fucking okay. Israel shot 940 children and 39 journalists, most of whom had press badges on them.
That's what they do, and then they'd be like, well, they were getting a little too close, so we felt threatened. It's like, no, you guys have trigger fingers.
Yeah,
you don't
and
care.
39 health workers, too, meaning the medical response teams.
Yeah, they just kill everybody.
It's really...
They don't consider Arab life worth it. They don't consider Palestinian life worth it. It's genuinely like, wake up. You are just killing people at this point. You're not doing anything but just murder.
Yeah. And
it's
that's
not protecting anyone.
That's why I dislike, I've talked about this before very long ago. Well, not very long ago. This podcast isn't that long. It's old. But Gal Gadot, she's a very proud ex-member of the Israeli army. And it's like required to go there if you're an Israeli citizen. But she was like,
it's required to do a serve.
Yeah. But she's very proud, and like that was almost like her like notch of being a badass when she was selected to be Wonder Woman. But that's why I don't like her, is because that's what the army does. It's not it's not an army that like patrols the city and keeps them safe. They are aggressive towards the oppression of the Palestinian people. It's not humane what they do. They don't treat them like humans. They are lesser than them. That's what they think. And so Ilhan Omar, her criticism for AIPAC is justified, because people have been criticizing her language choices, and so she apologized for that, but affirmed her commitment to Palestine, which I appreciated again. But then her mentions, as we were saying, were flooded with racist, Islamophobic, and anti-Palestinian responses. Yeah. And so it's not about being better or doing better or being more aware. This whole thing, and in a lot of ways, is about destroying Palestine advocacy.
Yeah.
And that's what is the most upsetting, is because they are in so much need, if not the most need. There's a really good article on Vox by this woman called Hannah El-Sheik. I should pronounce these better, but she's a really good journalist, and she has this very good article about how this controversy around Ilhan Omar shows how little we care about Palestinian lives, and how this conversation must center on the plight of the Palestinians.
It must.
So this controversy is brewing in Washington, D.C. over Omar's comments about the influence of the Israel lobby groups, and how the uncritical support of these groups that many members of Congress give Israel is increasingly hardline with a right-wing government. And backlash against her remarks, they prompted House Democrats, as they were saying, to make plans to introduce and vote on resolution this week that would make her remarks the same thing as being in anti-Semitism. So I just want you to, like, knowing all you know now about what AIPAC is, criticizing that, they want that criticism to be equated with anti-Semitism, which is
it doesn't make any fucking sense. It's to block your view of what's really going on.
Yeah, and I'm very,
which is murder.
Exactly, it's murder. It's genocide.
It's apartheid.
It's apartheid, genocide. It's cruel, inhumane.
I hope one day we look back and think, how did we let that happen?
I really hope so.
Government eliminated a whole nother group of people.
Mm-hmm. Look at any fucking map and how it progresses to the land that Israel has swallowed up Palestine. It literally has swallowed it up. And it's like where did these people go? They were either murdered or forced out of the homes they've always known. I'm going to get more into Palestine after a quick commercial break. I also need to take a deep breath, and I'll be right back. Okay, and I'm back. Okay, so as I was saying,
We live in hell.
Yeah, we live in hell. But amid this frenzy about the controversy around Omar, thankfully, as we mentioned before, congressional, black, and progressive caucuses have forced the House Democrats to put off this issue. But there's been a glaring lack of context surrounding Omar's beliefs. And perhaps most of all, there has been a total disregard for the plight of the Palestinian people. So maybe you're asking, like, why is Omar so steadfast in her criticism of Israeli policies and groups like AIPAC, knowing that it'll spark attacks, smears, and mischaracterizations against her? Well, one of the core issues of the Palestinian human rights struggle is that Palestinians have faced 70 years of refugeehood. Omar is a refugee herself, and she continues to identify as such and chooses to uplift the voices and affirm the struggle of the refugees worldwide, including Palestinians. As a researcher for the Palestinian diaspora, this is what the writer is saying of this article, and as descendant of a Palestinian family that was ethnically cleansed from their land in 1967, it is a relief to me to finally hear voices in Washington speaking out for Palestinian rights, like that of Bernie Sanders and Representative Betty McCollum, Rashida Tlaib, and Omar. Can you say her name one more time?
Tlaib.
But basically, this writer is very, like, the fact that, just imagine being Palestinian, growing up Palestinian, and finally someone is defending you after all of these years of feeling like you have no place in the world. It's very, very important, and it's so powerful. And I think instead of dismissing her or questioning her role in the House Committee on Foreign Affairs, we should defend Omar and defer to her experience as a survivor of war and refugeehood. A huge reason why she continues to defend Palestinians is because she understands them. And I think that's so important.
Yeah.
Because she shared her own story about fleeing civil war in her homeland of Somalia and living in a refugee camp and being unable to dream of a better future than those harsh conditions, and how her passion for public service was born while serving as her late grandfather's interpreter in the U.S. as a teen. She knows intimately how innocent civilians are forced to endure injustice from governments and other powerful actors, and she's attempting to use her voice as a member of Congress to protect the most vulnerable. That's what your politicians should do. They're Yep. supposed to use their voices to protect the people that need it the most vulnerable. The fucking 1% doesn't need anything, no protection. The politicians should be looking out for everybody, especially those that need it the most. And that's what I love about her. She's not Palestinian. She's not Middle Eastern. But she cares about the Palestinian people because she's a fucking human being
Yeah.
that understands struggle. And she understands that these individuals have no one else advocating for them. They don't have a fucking hero. And she's willing to stand up and stay strong. And that's what I love about her so much. She didn't apologize for her stance. She didn't take it back. She knows she knows who she is. Sorry, I'm like,
These are all valid points. She is a person of the people, like most of these politicians are not.
Exactly. And for Omar, her identity means speaking up for victims of the Saudi war in Yemen, and citizens living under the brutal Saudi regime. So she always voices for the voiceless. That is very important as a politician and very needed. It's not fucking like she's not a rich politician only looking out for the well-being of her class. She is truly voicing for the voiceless. And her speaking out also means speaking out for the Palestinians. Just as it is becoming clearer to many Americans that a progressive agenda in the U.S. includes solidarity with Palestinian struggle for freedom and equality, Omar's support for Palestinians is part of her core belief system. As such, she and other new members of Congress, like AOC, are creating space for others to speak up on this issue without fear. Mm-hmm. I want to just reiterate how badass, like, Cortez, Omar, and Tlaib are, because I hope they never leave, despite what that fucking dick said earlier in the episode. Something else to keep in mind is that Omar was elected in 2018, which was a remarkably deadly year for Palestinians at the hand of the Israeli government and military. According to the UN Human Rights Report, the Israeli military killed 140 protesters and again injured 9,000 others between only March and December of 2018. Not even the whole year. Just from March and December till December of 2018, 9,000 people were injured and 140 were killed. These Palestinians were protesting to demand an end to the 70 years of refugeehood while also demanding an end to Israel's cruel and illegal siege of Gaza during weekly protests known as the Great March of the Return. And we've talked about the NEPCA a couple episodes, like, I don't know how many episodes ago, but we've talked about it, so you should look up those episodes because it's a very important protest that keeps happening as a reminder that these people exist. And at the same time, Omar was elected as the Trump administration cut funding to the UN Relief and Works Agency, which is an essential source of humanitarian aid, like social services, healthcare, and education to the Palestinian refugees and the Palestinian cause. Approximately 7% of the 2 million Palestinians in the tiny besieged Gaza Strip are refugees, survivors, or descendants of those who were expelled from their homes during Israel's establishment in 1948, known as the Nakba catastrophe to the Palestinians. So basically, Trump cut off their main source of funding to refugees in Palestine. And on top of the harsh conditions for 70 years and counting, all of Gaza's residents who live under Israeli blockage and siege since 2007 have been regarded as a second class. They don't have the rights. They're constantly checked. There's checkpoints. They cut off their water or whatever. They live as secondhand citizens and secondhand species in their own country.
Mm-hmm.
And this is all regarded, the Israeli government says it's regarded as a measure of collective punishment. And Palestinians and the Palestinians of Gaza are cut off from other Palestinians in the world. So in Gaza in particular, we've talked about it before, but conditions are especially hard. And this is all just, like, all of this anti-Semitism talk is distracting us from the actual root of all this evil, which is the Israeli government.
Like,
Netanyahu, exactly. And I'm not trying to belittle anti-Semitism. It's so anti-Semitism, and Anna brought this up last episode or maybe the episode before that. The equating something like this with anti-Semitism only lessens the value of what that is.
What it means.
Exactly. Like, when you have someone with, like, a swastika tattoo or, like someone who adores Hitler, that's anti-Semitism. Or, like, someone that really doesn't think that Jewish people should exist, that's anti-Semitism. But criticizing Israel? No.
That's just anti-evil government.
Exactly.
Murdering people.
Exactly. I have a little bit more to say. I'm almost done. Thank you for sticking with me. But Omar has prompted for what some is an uncomfortable debate. She has exposed the double standards and the hypocrisy of many old guard Democratic Party leaders who speak out against racism and injustice in the U.S., but overlook the racism and injustice that Israel imposes upon the Palestinian people. So that's what infuriates me, but also, like, doesn't really surprise me about the Democratic Party, because I kind of just, like, accepted that the majority of politicians in America, let alone the world, are, like, not good. The ones that I do like are, like, a handful. But even though these old Democratic people that have been longstanding in the government, they tout this anti-racism and injustice rhetoric, they never have spoken up about the Palestinian struggle.
No.
And that's very important, because speaking ill about Israel is almost anti-American at this point. Because Israel and America have such a long-standing history together.
Tell them.
It's just speaking out, like, it's, that's what's so terrifying, is that because of this close relationship that America has always had to Israel, because it literally funnels money into the army of Israel for no fucking reason. Like, why is our government giving any government money to fund an army? Shouldn't we be questioning that? Like, we should 100% be questioning why we're giving guns to an army that is just shooting children.
Mm-hmm.
But instead of that, the majority of Democrats don't acknowledge the plight of the Palestinian people. And when they finally do, when someone like Omar finally does, she is dragged.
Yeah.
And that is not fucking
called
okay.
Called an enemy of the people, basically.
But she is the only person that is, like, fighting for the people at this point.
Mm-hmm.
In her recent statements that have drawn accusations of anti-Semitism, she was clear that her critique was focused on a lobbyist group and the actions of the Israeli military and the policies of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. States, militaries, and lobby groups are not and should not be beyond critique. And Omar has showed that by recently criticizing the role of Saudi Arabia's financial influence in Washington. So she's not just going after one fucking culture or whatever. It's just not like, even, it's literally politics. It's politics.
Yeah, what Mehdi Hassan said earlier.
Yeah.
He just is pointing 100%. Out that she goes after the evil governments.
Exactly. It's never a group of people. It's never a culture. She's a politician who understands politics.
Mm-hmm.
And we should consider it so important that she's speaking out and staying strong in her statements. And we should consider why it is so much easier for some to believe that a young Black refugee Muslim woman who wears a hijab is motivated by anti-Semitism and her criticism of a lobbyist group rather than a desire to end warfare and the pain of refugeehood. Like, why is the majority of closed-minded fuckfaces, why is their first opinion of her and her words anti-Semitic rather than her desire for reform to end warfare and the Palestinian pain and the plight of refugees everywhere? She understands it better than they ever fucking will. So, sorry, I was on a fucking thing.
You know what? It's it's so fucked up and so real, like, where you're like, this is unbelievable that people just, they're so stuck in this weird way of being afraid to attack a government that's clearly has taken the reins and is now on its own path of evil, just banged my knee, that they don't give a shit.
Yeah.
And it's beyond frustrating. It's like, what are we even fucking doing here?
No.
One
more thing.
Yeah, go for it.
I want to remind you all that the majority of the last, 15 minutes that I've been speaking of, or I've been, paraphrasing this one article by this woman, Hannah El-Sheikh, and she is very well-written, talented journalist, and I highly recommend you check out the entirety of her article because I got kind of just pulled from it, but she ends her article with this. Omar understands the plight of refugees who live in uncertainty and sometimes cannot even dream of a better life. This is why she speaks out so boldly against groups like AIPAC, who lobby for pro-Israel policies as the nation continues to act with impunity, causing more Palestinian suffering and stifling the hope and dream that the Palestinian people will one day be able to live in freedom and dignity in their own land. So... Thank you, Hannah, for writing this.
Go to our
I hope
footnotes.
A lot more people share it. But yeah, go to our footnotes, share this article, share all the articles that we mentioned. Just even spark this conversation with your colleagues, with your coworkers. Like, it's important to call representatives to let everyone know that you care about this issue. It's not just for people like Anna and I. It's not just because we're Middle Eastern and we care about Palestine. It should be for everybody. For Bernie Sanders, a white Jewish man, is defending her. That's saying something. It's a human issue, not a Muslim issue, not a refugee issue, not a brown person issue. It's a human issue. The Palestinian struggle is a human struggle.
Yeah.
That's what infuriates me, is that it's not seen as important. I hate it. I hate that Palestine has been suffering for almost a century. I don't know. Sorry. I'm going to cry.
It's amazing how far we've come with all this bullshit. Go to our footnotes. You'll see everything that we were pulling from. You know, I was pulling from a Splinter article. I was pulling from a New York Times article and a Washington Post article and a Political article. I was kind of mashing it in and out. But go read these things. You'll get the full details. Maybe we missed a few things that you'll understand. You'll see the links. You'll see links to... anti-Semitic tweets by other Republicans that were never called out. You'll see it all. And to close off, because we got to run, I want to read a thread by Youssef Munayer, who is a great follow on Twitter as well. He is basically like a PhD who works for the USCPR. He's out there. Go follow him. We retweet him a lot, but I want to repost this, or I want to read this thread to you guys to really follow, just understand what underlying is going on.
Mm-hmm.
So he says, a lot of the conversation now around this smearing of Ilhan Omar, allegations of anti-Semitism and the U.S.-Israel relations are something of a proxy for a bigger tense divide among Jews in the U.S. and Israel. Some thoughts on this will follow. The Jewish community in the United States and Israel are roughly equal-sized populations and in many ways embody two different answers to the Jewish question and anti-Semitism, Zionism versus multiculturalism. Zionism answer is that the only way to ensure the security of the Jewish people is through a Jewish state, a largely homogeneous ethno-religious nationalism where Jews dominate the state, the laws, and the security apparatus. Multiculturalism provides a different answer. It sees the security of the Jews wound up in the security of other minorities and responds by trying to build an inclusive society where people can be who they are in safety and security, i.e. civil rights, not ethnic nationalism, is key. This is one reason why the Jewish community historically in the U.S. has been at the forefront of the fight for civil rights against racism and exclusion. But in Israel, exclusion has always been prioritized over civil rights. Equal rights to American Jews is viewed as a path to security. Equal rights to Israeli Jews is viewed as a path to insecurity. This tension has always been there, but in some moments it can be elevated or diminished. Right now, it is very much elevated. On top of this, you have another tension growing in recent years. More and more American Jews view what Israel is doing to Palestinians as fundamentally contrary to Jewish values. At the same time, the Israel government has doubled down on its entrenchment of occupation and apartheid. But this is not the end of it. You also have the politicization of the U.S.-Israel relationship, which has been driven by Netanyahu and Israel through an alliance with evangelicals that undergird the GOP. Most American Jews vote Democratic and voted for Obama twice. This broke into the open with Netanyahu's blatant political attack on President Obama, the first black president who himself embodied what a multicultural America could lead to. But it became far worse with Trump. Trump secured the White House by using racism, sexism, anti-Semitism, Islamophobia, xenophobia, and so on. It emboldened white nationalists and brought a rise in hate crimes. Then Netanyahu, the head of the Jewish state, responded not by challenging Trump's anti-Semitism, but by legitimizing it. He said there was no greater friend to the Jewish people than the white supremacist in chief. Then you had Charlottesville, then the Tree of Life, where a lunatic anti-Semite walked into the synagogue and murdered Jews because he believed Jews were helping to bring immigrants into the U.S. His anti-immigrant hatred reinforced his anti-Semitism and vice versa, reminding us these evils cannot be fought in isolation, as Zionism would suggest, but rather must be opposed together as multiculturalism would counter. From long-standing structural realities to dynamics which have emerged over time and in recent years in particular, all this adds up to the perfect storm of growing Jewish-American alienation from Israel and increasing criticism of Zionism altogether. This is a major challenge to Israel because a strong relationship with the American Jewish community is important to U.S.-Israel relations. So how can you blunt the alienation of American Jews from a right-wing Israel that has allied with right-wing governments and embraced anti-Semites in the U.S., which have directly contributed to the insecurity of American Jews? Well, one way is to send a message to the American Jewish community that even if they might be appalled by the right, don't think the left will welcome you either. This is done by elevating a narrative that creates a false equivalence between anti-Semitism on the right or on the left and the right. It is a classic Zionist response to American Jews. You are not safe in a multicultural society because you are Jews, and the only answer is Zionism. Both the right and the left have failed you equally.
Well,
oh, you guys, it's madness.
But that's so true.
It's all true.
It's so true that they make it sound like as an American Jew, as a Jewish person anywhere, Zionism is your only way to not be prosecuted or punished or oppressed
in any way. Yeah, and it's not true.
That's not true. They instill fear. It's a culture of fear. That's all it is. Trump won because of a culture of fear, and it's the same culture of fear that makes Zionism even a possibility that it's not evil. It is so evil. Any fucking ideology that puts one culture, one group of people above another, it should be questioned. And you can't displace one group because you deserve it more.
Yeah.
That doesn't make any fucking sense.
Yeah.
You are no better than anybody.
No one is any better than anybody. Yeah. Shireen's not better than me. I'm not better than Shireen. We're not better than you. You're not better than us. It's nothing. We are all just human. We're all just doing what we can to survive. And no one has the right to take anything from anyone. And if you do, you are an evil person.
Evil.
If you think you own something,
if you think you're deserving of something that someone else has and has lived on for ages, that's not being proud of a culture. That is being a Zionist. A Zionist is not something to be proud of. A Zionist does not mean that you are Jewish. A Zionist means that you are a corrupt, evil person that has mistakenly assumed that you are entitled to something that was never yours.
Yeah.
It was never anybody's. It's the world. It's all of ours. I hope this episode was informational for you. I really recommend you look at our footnotes in the description and look at the sources that we were pulling from. I don't know what's going to happen in the next few days, but I hope this conversation goes in the right direction. Not our conversation, I mean like the larger conversation at hand, but like we've been talking for like an hour now and there's still like so much that is like boiling inside me.
Yeah, so we're going to end it here.
Yeah.
You know, follow us on Ethnically Ambig on Instagram, follow us on Ethnically Amb on Twitter. We're posting a lot of these links on Twitter, so follow us because we're constantly retweeting and posting and getting the word out there about what's going on. You can follow me at Anna Hosnier.
And you can follow me at Shirohero, Shero Hero on Instagram and Twitter. It's the same thing, Shirohero 666.
And go to our website, Ethnically Ambiguous Pod, to get footnotes. The footnotes are also in the description. So if you literally click more details, you'll see it. And you can click through to these articles and read along if you want. Yeah. That's actually confusing. You have to read along at the same time as you're listening. But and you can buy our merch at TeePublic, even though it feels inappropriate to plug merch right now. So, Shereen, you going to bite that ass?
I would bite that ass.